Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, your host as usual, and we have a very special program in store for you today. We're going to be talking to Jimmy Moore. Jimmy Moore is author of a great new book called Cholesterol Clarity, What the HDL is Wrong with My Numbers. And it's a great book because it really lays out the controversy about cholesterol. Is cholesterol important? Why are so many people being put on statin drugs? Jimmy Moore is a celebrity in his own right. He is a big proponent of the low-carb diet, and he has a personal story that he's going to share with us. He's written numerous books. He is author of the very popular Livin' La Vida Low Carb blog, which is at livinlavidalowcarb.com/blog. And he's also himself the host of a daily podcast, the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show podcast. And so you can find him at Livin' Low Carb Man. What's the website again, Jimmy?
For the podcast, it's thelivinlowcarbshow.com.
Okay. So now he has a wonderful personal story to share with us about how he got involved with this. Jimmy, why don't you go ahead and share that?
Sure. So back in 2003, I was a 410-pound man. I'm 6'3", so very tall, but it's very hard even to hide 400-pound tall person. But I did.
Even in Spartanville, South Carolina.
Even in Spartanburg, South Carolina. That's right.
Spartanburg. So, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Oh, that's all right. So I had size 62-inch waist pants, 5XL shirts. I was on 3 prescription medications for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, breathing problems. I was just a literal mess, Dr. Hoffman, and I needed to do something about it. And it wasn't like I wasn't aware that I needed to do something. I had tried all these things over the years and nothing was working for me. So my mother-in-law actually was the impetus for me starting on a low carb diet. She bought me Dr. Atkins' New Diet Revolution at Christmas time that year of 2003. God bless mother-in-laws giving diet books to their son-in-laws that are fat. And so I read that one, and it totally shifted everything I ever thought I knew about diet forever. And so I tried it. I thought the guy was a whack, but I tried it anyway because everything else had failed. And the first month, I lost 30 pounds doing this. Now, sounds like a lot, but I still weighed over 380 pounds. But I kept at it, and
typically you would be a candidate for a gastric bypass. That's the current way of dealing with this type of thing.
That's right.
And generally what they say is that if you are that heavy, you know, forget about it. You're not going to lose weight with any kind of diet.
Or if you do, you're going to gain it all back within 2 or 3 years.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so within 100 days, I'd lost 100 pounds doing this. And it was at that point, Dr. Hoffman, that I knew there was something about what I was doing that was the right thing for my body. And so by the end of that year, I had taken off a total of 180 pounds and started me on this journey to becoming the Livin' La Vida Low Carb blogger, future podcaster, and now author.
Wow. And so this new book is a fabulous book because it's a collaboration with one of the foremost scientists, a medical doctor and researcher, Dr. Eric Westman, who has published some of the most respected research on the benefits of the low-carbohydrate diet. So tell us about how you got together with Dr. Westman.
Yeah, so back in 2006, when I've been blogging for about a year or so, there was a huge kind of scientific conference, a meeting of the mind, so to speak, of a lot of medical doctors there in Brooklyn. And they invited me to come because my blog was getting pretty big. And they said, you know, hey, would you like to come and report on the event and meet a lot of these doctors? I'm like, yeah. So I go and I'm sitting in one of these conferences. And of course, it's a medical conference. So a lot of the information was at that time going over my head because I had no idea what they were talking about. And I happened to be sitting in on one of the sessions and sitting right next to Dr. Eric Westman saying something about Pepsi, and it was all going over my head. And I remember Dr. Westman leaning over to me and says, "Wouldn't that be a diet Pepsi?" And it was kind of, it put my, I guess my pretension about all these medical doctors at ease.
Uh-huh.
And I said, there's something different about this guy. We had become good friends over the years. Of course, as you said, he's a very highly respected researcher, did some of the first studies on low carb diets, genuinely, you know, low carb ketogenic style diets. And he was one of the authors on the new Atkins for a new you. So he's no lightweight when it comes to this field.
Yeah, he actually collaborated, I believe, with the late Dr. Atkins on some of his later work.
That's right.
And became really a well-respected researcher, although, you know, he stuck his neck out because in those days it was professional suicide for a doctor and a respected researcher to come out in favor of this diet, which everybody knew would kill you. I mean, that's eating protein and fat. I mean, everybody knew that those were the bad guys and that, you know, eating a low-fat diet was the way to go.
That's right. Yeah, and he was, you know, changed because one of his patients, actually several of his patients, came to him and said, "My life was changed from reading a diet book." And he had never heard or learned in medical school that people could lose weight and get healthy by reading a diet book. So he was intrigued and, yeah, went directly to Dr. Atkins's clinic and learned from the man himself. So, you know, again, he's put himself out there and still putting himself out there, still highly respected. He's the president of the American Society of Bariatric Physicians. So definitely in high positions of authority within a very prestigious medical community and yet still holding true to these things that he's seen himself in his own.
Right. And you have, there are a variety of high-level professionals who are also part of this book. Dr. Fred Pescatore, a doctor here in New York City. Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who we've interviewed here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Highly critical of statin drugs.
Oh, yeah.
There's Dr. Robert Lustig, who appeared on 60 Minutes talking about the evils of sugar. And I see here Johnny Bowden, who's been a guest on this program as well. And so just a cast of really important health professionals, Chris Masterjohn and Dr. Yuvi Ravenskov. They're all in this new book. Gary Taubes, of course, who revolutionized the popular understanding of the effects of high-protein, high-fat diets and low-fat, low-carbohydrate eating. Gary's been a guest here on this program as well. So anyway, Cholesterol Clarity, tell us about the book.
Sure. So after I lost my weight back in 2004, Dr. Hoffman, I went to see my doctor because I thought he would be so proud of me for losing 180 pounds and how healthy I had made myself. So this was the genesis of why I wanted to write this book, because I went to see him and I got my results and I saw my HDL cholesterol had risen to around 72. I think pre-diet, it was somewhere in the low 20s, upper teens. It was really bad, and then it became really good. And then I saw my triglycerides, which I don't have the data on what they were before the diet, but I remember that they were 43 at the end of the diet. And so I'm like, okay, these markers show my heart health is pretty darn good, the ratio between the triglycerides and the HDL. So I go to him. Thought I had kicked his dog or something the day that we were talking about my cholesterol results, because he said, "These aren't good." And I said, "But what about the HDL? Doesn't that signify great, you know, heart health marker?" Mm-hmm. "Oh, yes, 72 is really good, but you need to be on a statin drug immediately."
What was your total cholesterol at the time?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Oh, okay.
And then the triglycerides, I said, "Isn't that really, really good as well? Doesn't that signify great heart health?" "Yeah, that's the lowest I've ever seen in any of my patients. But you need to be on a statin drug." And you know why he wanted to put me on a statin drug is total cholesterol was 285, and my LDL cholesterol was 185. So at the end of the day, all he was looking at was total cholesterol and LDL-C as the be-all, end-all markers, which kind of led me in my mind to say, "Well, why are you measuring anything else if that's all you're predicating treatment on?"
Well, you know, that's what we call paint by numbers medicine. There's a very specific protocol that's endorsed by the American Heart Association and the National Cholesterol Education Project, which really dictates when doctors should use statins. And of course, you know, it's based on LDL, total cholesterol. If your LDL is above 160 and you're healthy, you got to take a statin. If you have any risk factors, 130. If you're a heart patient, they want it under 100 or even under 70. So it's all about just your LDL. But for a lot of listeners, they're going to say, well, but that makes sense. LDL is the bad stuff. What's wrong with that approach, Jimmy? Is it too simplistic?
It absolutely is too simplistic, because LDL, as the measurement that you typically see on your cholesterol test result, is an estimated number, a calculated number using the Friedewald equation. And so it's kind of ludicrous that they want to put a precise, you know, number for treatment on a number that's calculated. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, there are different kinds of LDL within that LDL. People don't realize there's different sizes of the LDL particle, and we talk all about this in Cholesterol Clarity, but you're looking for more of the large fluffy kind, the buoyant, what we call pattern A, versus pattern B, which are the small, dense LDL particles. Those are the much more atherogenic LDL particles, and so you've got to get that particle size and particle number breakdown so that your LDL cholesterol actually means something.
Right. And I see this all the time. I see patients who seemingly on paper have very high risk for cardiovascular disease, but if their particle size is okay, they may have non-existent plaque, you know, by, you know, when we image their carotid arteries or when we do an EBT heart scan looking for calcium in the coronary arteries. Paradoxically, these women who may have a cholesterol of 300, they have no plaque whatsoever.
Right. Yeah, I actually have a total cholesterol today. Six, and I had a heart scan done, and I have a heart calcium score of zero as well.
Oh, okay. So I'm glad you had that test, because I was hoping you weren't living in denial, you know, about the potential risk. Because and it's actually good, because for half your life, you were at risk. You know, you walked around with a lot of excess weight, and that's pro-inflammatory, and you know, your insulin was high, and you had a lot of risk factors. So I'm glad you turned it around at a sufficiently young age to avert problems.
Yeah, and I'm trying to avoid and helping others to avoid the fate that happened to my own brother, Dr. Hoffman. My brother Kevin, at the age of 32, had a series of heart attacks, almost killed him.
Wow.
Back in 1999, and he went through, you know, going in and out of hospitals, following the dietary advice. You'll see, you know, I dedicated Cholesterol Clarity to him, because he followed all the conventional wisdom that he was told about diet and health and how he should treat himself. And he still died of obesity, you know, diabetes and heart disease, doing all of these things that are supposed to make him heart healthy. At the age of 41, he was gone.
Right. Well, so, you know, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. What's wrong with a little bit of a statin drug? You know, just precaution. I mean, when we drive in cars, we wear seatbelts. You know, when we get on our bikes or motorcycles, we wear helmets. What's wrong with a little bit of a, you know, protective medication that they claim is so benign? I mean, side effects virtually nil.
That is how they've marketed those things to us. Oh, it's kind of a health insurance to prevent you from having a heart attack. But there's a sobering statistic that we put in the book that 3 out of 4, in one of the studies that I cite, 3 out of 4 people who are admitted to a hospital for some kind of cardiovascular event of you know, one or another, they had, get this, normal levels, healthy, quote-unquote, levels of cholesterol, total cholesterol. So 3 out of 4 had levels under 200. So there's no correlation there that having the lower levels of total cholesterol equaled better results and prevention of heart disease and heart attacks and all this stuff. So taking a statin drug, number one, is doing the wrong thing. You know, cholesterol is not the problem in and of itself. So taking a statin to merely lower cholesterol artificially, you're actually putting your body at more risk, because you're removing the very substance that, if you do have a heart attack, you know, or some kind of an event that's going to happen, that cholesterol is there to protect you. So I like to liken it to firefighters, Dr. Hoffman. You know, if a firefighter goes out to the scene of a fire, are we blaming the firefighters mm-hmm. as the culprit, the right. reason why there's fires? After all, every single fire there is, there the firefighters right. are. So they must be the reason why, you know, fires happen. We would never say that. That would be ludicrous. And yet that's the exact same thing we're saying about cholesterol, blaming it for heart disease and blaming it as the problem. So what statin drugs are doing is it's removing the firefighters. So when your house is on fire, guess what? There's no firefighters to come save you, and your house is going to burn down, and that's not good.
And what are some of the side effects that you enumerate in the book? Because you talked to a lot of experts and gathered a lot of research. What are some of the unrecognized potential downsides to being on statins?
Yeah, I was on both Lipitor and Crestor before my low-carb diet, and I feel myself, I was very lucky, let's put it that way, that all I had was a little bit of joint pain and muscle ache. I remember going up for a rebound while taking Lipitor in a pickup game of basketball, and my thumb just went straight backwards.
Mm.
And I'd never seen anything like that before, and I go to the emergency room, and the ER doc says, "Do you take a cholesterol-lowering medication?" I said, "Yeah, I'm on Lipitor." He said, "You may want to talk to your doctor about that, because these have been shown more and more. You know, people are showing up in the ER with all these kind of injuries."
Wow. That was a very astute physician.
Yeah.
Not the typical doctor you might run into in the ER.
That's right.
Because that was a thoughtful assessment. And the vast majority of doctors, their reaction when you complain of this, that, or the other thing, they go, "Well, what do you expect? You know, you're 48 or you're 54 or you're 65.
Right.
I take statin drugs too. And I'm fine. I mean, we're getting old. We have aches and pains. How do you know what's what?"
Yep. Yeah, he was a young guy. So I think the younger generation of physicians that are coming up, you know, they're kind of thinking a little more outside the box than the old guard. But I was grateful for that suggestion. So I talked to my doctor, and he said, "Okay, you don't like the Lipitor. I'll put you on a much better medication." You know what he put me on? It was Crestor.
Yeah.
So it's the same classification of drug, a statin. Yeah. I still had the same issues. So, again, I'm very lucky that all I had was muscle and joint pain. There's one of my experts in the book,
yeah.
Dr. Dwayne Gravlin, who is
oh, yeah.
very well known as a medical doctor, NASA astronaut.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So he's got a website, spacedoc.com, but he has been out there at the forefront trying to warn people about the dangers of statin drugs, because he suffered from a very strange neurodegenerative effect from just taking Lipitor. Just a few months is all he took it,
mm-hmm.
and he had all these major brain issues. He had this thing called global transient amnesia,
right?
And it took him back to his childhood. It was kind of a really strange, you know, condition that he went through, but his doctors were denying that it had anything at all to do with this statin drug he was taking for his high cholesterol, and happened to be like 230 or 240. It wasn't high.
Yeah.
And so he's now suffering the ill effects of that. For this particular book, I did a lot of audio interviews with these various experts, as I have done on my podcast for many years. But he could not hear well enough, Dr. Gravlin, to do the interview over, over the phone. So I had to actually do that via email, and he's going to be in a wheelchair soon. It's a really sad story. If you get a chance, we do tell Dr. Gravlin's story in the book, but it's that kind of thing. It's this whole, you know, the brain health effects from taking a drug that is supposedly making you healthier, and yet in the process, it's doing so many dastardly things to health. I don't know why they're still on the market.
Well, I do. I know whether it's still on the market.
Well, me too.
Yeah. It's sort of a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
You know, why they're still on the market is because, well, it's, I think, a couple of reasons, if I might share my own opinions. First of all, in medicine, there's a principle, don't just stand there, do something.
Right.
So it is now believed that we have something, we can control our fate vis-a-vis the major killer via a medication. That's a very appealing concept, and doctors are susceptible to kind of linear thinking, and they think, okay, cholesterol's the problem, we're going to lower cholesterol, these drugs have been proven, and in fact, in studies, People who are very at high risk for cardiovascular disease, people who've had bypasses or stents or have had heart attacks, statistically, it's been shown that there are some advantages.
Right.
So extrapolating from that group, that selected group, which is the very minority of people who are on statins these days, they say, well, then if it's good for those people, it's good for everyone. And then, of course, there's the huge profit potential for these drugs. You know, traditionally, drugs used to be used when we got sick. I mean, you would take an antibiotic for a week, and, you know, might be an expensive antibiotic, but that's only for a week. We're now developing drugs that people are on for a lifetime. So to treat diabetes, to treat cholesterol, to treat pre-osteoporosis. There are so many pre-disease states that we define as having to need a fix that we're creating a great sinecure for the pharmaceutical industry. It's just a real boondoggle. And government support is there, and you know, the public is on board, the media is on board, everybody's getting with the program.
Well, and with statin drugs, it's the number one best-selling drug of all time. They've made $29 billion with a B dollars annually and rising off of this drug, and it's all predicated on lower cholesterol equals less heart disease. And yet that correlation's never been really accurately shown to be true.
You know, your book went to presses before a study came out. I actually shared it with listeners on my weekend program, Health Talk. The study is about direct-to-consumer advertising. Now, you know those typical ads for cholesterol medication?
Oh, yeah.
They usually show very healthy individuals. They don't show very sick individuals, because the idea is that the sick people, they probably already know that they need to be taking something. But the healthy people, they're in sort of a denial about their potential risk, and they need to be reminded that they might be a ticking time bomb, and that even if they feel great and they're exercising and they're slim and they're eating real healthy food, that they might drop dead in a minute. So the advertisements feature these healthy people, and the net effect of these advertisements, what they found, because they were researchers. They didn't have an axe to grind. They just wanted to see who ended up picking up on these ads.
Yep.
The very people who picked up on these ads were the people least likely to benefit from statin drugs. Now, America is one of the, I think, maybe the only country in the civilized world which allows ads on TV to convince people to be on medication. Most countries are trying to get people to take less medication because they want to save money. Here we want to generate profits, and we want more people to be on medication. The theme is we want to make people aware of potential risks so that they can have that conversation with their doctor. Well, many doctors are very compliant. They say, hey, whatever you say, you know, I'm not going to risk losing you as a patient. So, you know, if you think you need to be on it, great, great idea. I'm all for it. But inappropriately, a lot of people who are very low risk are on these medications. I want to talk about specific groups with you, Jimmy, because there are certain groups who are very often placed on statin drugs and maybe the least likely to benefit. Let's take a look at women as a whole, and especially older women. I see women who are 85 who have you know, high cholesterol like yours, 285, maybe something like that. They're told that they need to be on a statin drug. What is your research showing on that?
Yeah, so one of my experts in the book, you mentioned his name earlier, was Dr. Chris Masterjohn, you know, world-renowned lipidologist that done really great work. And he said in traditional cultures, it's not uncommon for women as they get older to see higher and higher levels of cholesterol. That's just a natural part of their life. And these are people groups that he's referring to, free from heart disease, where the women had an average level of 250 total cholesterol and some as high as 300. And yet, that's just the natural level of cholesterol as women start to get older. So women especially, if you have, you know, kind of that borderline 240, 250, you know, and your doctor's pushing statin drug, that's completely normal in these people groups that are free from heart disease. So it's not something that needs to be medicated. It's just how God made you.
Right. It's a sign of robust health that you're producing the cholesterol. What would you say to an individual who checks in, maybe they're age 70 or 75, and their cholesterol, without being on a statin drug, is 110? Would you have a concern about that?
Yes. Too low cholesterol is probably the most misunderstood, misdiagnosed thing that's out there. At one of the famous examples we put in the book of too low a cholesterol, was a man in his 50s named Tim Russert. He was the host of Meet the Press on NBC. Wow. And I
didn't get to that part of the book. Tell me.
Ah, this is a fun part of the book because I have a chapter on what do you mean my cholesterol is too low.
Okay.
And so the example I gave was Tim Russert, who was on a low-fat diet, was bicycling every day, was taking a statin drug, was eating lots of healthy whole grains, all the things that his doctor told him to do.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 month before his death, he actually died while preparing for his show. And back in 2008, he was in his 50s. And he died of his very first heart attack, but 1 month before, his doctor said, you are the picture of heart.
Yeah.
You want to know why he thought his, patient was the picture of heart health? His total cholesterol was 105.
Oof.
So 105, any doctor in America would look at 105 and says, wow, that is incredible. You are just doing incredible. Whatever you're doing, keep it up because that's healthy. And yet what happened was it left Tim Russert without the firefighters, which we talked about earlier, without the cholesterol to help him because he was highly, highly inflammatory. He had a heart scan score over 500,
mm-hmm.
and ideally you want that definitely below 100, minus zero. These kinds of things, if it's predicated on cholesterol alone, yeah, that 110 example you gave and the 105 with Tim Russert, that's bad news. You need higher cholesterol. In fact, a lot of the research is showing the higher your cholesterol, the longer you'll live.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's especially, in an older population. Show me an older individual with very low cholesterol, and I'll show you usually a person who might be checking out due to a serious disease.
Yeah.
But, lest we succumb to fatalism when it comes to prognosticating cardiovascular risk, I mean, if cholesterol's not the answer, what is? What kind of workup should people be undertaking to find out if they're at risk?
So we talked a little bit earlier about LDL particle size. So that's definitely one test to do. And the one that I like and have kind of seen some really good results from across the board is the NMR lipoprofile test. It's a test run out of Raleigh, North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and it measures for particle number and particle size breakdown. Plus, you get all the other standard lipid panel that you would get as well. They also throw in an insulin resistance score, which I really like, the LPIR score. It's going to tell you your state of metabolic health, whether your blood sugar is kind of doing some wacky things. So it's a really good test if you want to get tested. But like we were just talking about with the inflammation, there's a great inflammation marker, a key one, not the only one, but a key one, the HSCRP, and sometimes referred to just as CRP, but high sensitivity C-reactive protein. It's going to tell the tale of what's happening in your blood as it relates to the inflammation. That number should ideally be under 1.0 if you want to be really healthy. My current total is CRP is 0.55.
Well, congratulations to you. That is awesomely good. What about homocysteine? Homocysteine, don't get no respect anymore because it's been debunked. They now have buried the homocysteine hypothesis for all time because they claim it has nothing to do with the cardiovascular disease. What's your take on that?
Yeah, we left homocysteine out of this book, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go down too many rabbit trails in a book calling itself Cholesterol Clarity. I thought, you know what, let's give them the basics and a little more. But you're exactly right, Dr. Hoffman. Homocysteine is definitely one of those markers you want to be paying attention to. That's what I hope after people read this book. At the very end, I say, this is only the beginning. You need to keep digging into this. You need to listen to shows like Dr. Hoffman's show and my show and different ones to get that additional information, because literally you could go down a million rabbit trails with this issue of cholesterol and heart disease. There's just so many ways to go. So we did leave that out of Cholesterol Clarity just because we didn't want to cloud the issue too much.
Okay, let's focus on diet now. Triglycerides, they're circulating fat, so it would stand to reason that if you want to lower your circulating fats, you just eat less fat.
That's right? What they say, isn't it?
Trick question. Trick question.
You're not going to trick me on that one, but yeah, people might think that. But the number one way you can know if you're eating too many carbohydrates in your diet is to look at your triglycerides. If your trigs are over 100, not 150, because at 150, you're already showing signs of some metabolic issues that need to be taken care of. You really ideally need to have that number go below 100 and optimally under 70. My current triglycerides are 37, by the way.
You're very adherent to a low-carb diet, I can tell.
Oh, yeah. So triglycerides really tell the tale, and if you're going to look at one number on your total, you know, all your cholesterol panel that's on your standard panel, look at that triglyceride number and see if you fall under that 70. And if you don't, maybe you need to make some manipulations to your diet to make that happen.
Okay, so practically speaking, what do you eat? What does Jimmy Moore eat to achieve such spectacular results?
Yeah, so I am on what they call a ketogenic diet, and my next book is going to be called Keto Clarity, coming next year.
Great.
Where I talk about all of these great benefits that happen from being in a ketogenic diet. And, you know, I know people right now say, well, isn't that Atkins? Well, it's kind of Atkins, but it's a little more sophisticated than what I did back in 2004. 2004, I just, you know, cut carbs and ate a little more fat, and that was it, and I saw results. Well,
you were eating a bacon cheeseburger and you just threw away the bun.
On occasion, yeah. And so now I am actually testing my blood, just like you test your blood sugar, what we were talking about earlier. I test my blood for what they call beta-hydroxybutyrate. It's the ketone that floats around in the blood. So
you test your blood, not your urine, because I know that Atkins, I mean, I'm from New York City, and I know that Atkins used to give keto sticks to his patients to check their urine. Is a blood test a more accurate way? Do you really need to do that?
Yeah, this is an emerging field, which is why I'm writing a book about it. I did a whole test on myself from May of 2012 to May of 2013, purposely every single day testing blood sugar, blood ketone, and my weight, just to kind of track how I could do, in a keto-adapted state. So, yeah, this, like I said, this is kind of emerging. There's not a lot of resources out there on this yet. Dr. Steve Finney and Dr. Jeff Folick, co-wrote a book called The Art and Science of Low Carbohydrate Performance. And in there, in the middle of it, they start talking about, you know, how athletes can get into a more preferred, state if they get into a keto-adapted state. And they said, and you need to test for nutritional ketosis by testing your blood. So I was intrigued as kind of a self-experimenter myself. And so I went out and got this blood ketone monitor, which measures your blood ketone levels, similar to how it measures blood sugar levels, and did this for a whole year, measuring day and night, and sometimes every hour on the hour for a week, just to kind of see what's going on.
And you have some kind of apparatus to finger stick with to do this?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's a company called Abbott, and they make this blood ketone monitor called the Precision Extra. And the monitor itself can act as either a blood glucose or blood ketone monitor. I used it for blood ketone, but the strips are extremely expensive. At first, when I saw them in America, they were about $5 or $6 for each strip.
Mm-hmm.
So extremely expensive.
Yeah, I think this comes from Great Britain, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's
okay.
Right, overseas. And so when I was in Australia, I was last year I did a speaking tour through Australia in November. And they're like, Mike, we can get those for 70 cents a piece. And I said, load me up.
Yeah. Okay, so you got yourself a stash now.
Yeah, so I got a big stash. And I started testing, and I saw incredible results. So all of these markers that were good got even better. You know, and I lost a pretty good amount of weight as well. It showed me that there's some great therapeutic effects to this ketogenic diet that go well beyond weight loss. Weight loss is kind of a cool side effect. But all the clarity of mind, and then people with some of these diseases like epilepsy and Parkinson's and PCOS and bipolar. I mean, there's just so many conditions that nobody's really putting all of these pieces of the puzzle together all in one place, which is why I'm going to write Keto Clarity.
Right. But you are aware that, and I actually, a recent guest on my podcast, Dr. David Perlmutter is writing a book, or has written a book just out, called Grain Brain. So he's coming at it from a different standpoint. He's coming at it from the benefits of this type of diet for brain health and for avoidance of dementia, Alzheimer's, ALS, you name it. Because the brain, little known fact, actually subsists better on ketones, which are the byproducts of fat, than on sugar. We tend to think of, my brain needs sugar, my brain needs carbohydrates. Well, no, the brain actually does better on a ketogenic diet.
That's right. Yeah, he's going to be a guest on my podcast soon. And, yeah, I just got his book in the mail about 3 days ago, so I cannot wait to dive into that one.
There you go. All right. So, but the implementation of this has got to be challenging because this is a very, very restrictive diet. What do you end up eating, and how do you stand it? It's a draconian program.
That's what they say. So, you know, it's funny. All we're talking about here, Dr. Hoffman, is real food. You know, I've never understood what's controversial about eating real food. Butter is a real food. You know, full fat meats and cheeses, they're real food. So why are we belly aching over, you know, eggs? And there's kind of this horrible, horrible movement happening right now in our culture of moving to egg whites being preferred over the whole egg. And yet it's that yolk that is so nutritious, so nutrient dense. Why are we throwing those out? And yet that's kind of where we are. And it goes back to a lot of the fear of saturated fat. It goes back to thinking high cholesterol is the cause of heart disease. So all of these things are similar messages, kind of all coalesce. We're kind of behind the scenes trying to tell people the truth about some of this stuff. But it's real food. So, you know, I really enjoy cooking some eggs that I get from a local farmer. He sells me $2 a dozen. I can get real local farm eggs. That's really cheap, by the way. And I cook those in grass-fed butter and coconut oil. And then I'll throw a little bit of raw cheese. I live in South Carolina, so raw dairy is legal here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I put that on top, a little bit of sauerkraut on top of that for some fermentation. And then to put maybe some sour cream, maybe an avocado. So that's where you see a lot of the fat that I put into my diet. And I'll eat a meal like that, and I could go 8, 9, 10, 12 hours, sometimes even 24 hours between meals because I'm so satisfied. My body is running so efficiently on those ketones for fuel that I don't have to eat this breakfast snack, lunch snack, dinner snack, midnight snack. That's just a weird American culture thing that, you know, it's going to take a lot of doing to try to undo in people's minds.
Well, I think this is what people would say. They'd say, well, I just can't go without, you know, a snack, a carbohydrate. I need a, you know, my ice cream. I need a slice of bread now and then. You know, I need a reward, a cookie. How do you deal with the people who claim they just have overwhelming cravings and, you know, they want to put a gun to their head if they don't have these types of things?
410-pound Jimmy Moore would have agreed with every one of those things. But what you find is once you get into this, and once you get through that adaptation period, shifting from being a sugar burner to being a fat burner, that something amazing happens. All of those cravings, all of that hunger, which is driving the cravings, all of that disappears. And it happens spontaneously. It's just like you wake up one day and you're going, all right, why aren't I thinking about food? You know, in fact, when I first started doing my ketogenic, you know, experiment, my wife had to remind me, Jimmy, you have not eaten in a long time. When's the last time you ate? And it had been, you know, something like 20 hours. It was the day before. And she's like, you've got to eat something. I'm like, but I'm not hungry yet. You know,
you just became a lean, mean, fat burning machine.
Yep. Working on it.
That's amazing. So how would you account, however, for the fact that right now there's almost a resurgence of interest in vegetarian low-fat diets? I mean, probably the leading proponent is Bill Clinton himself.
Yeah.
You know, with he's got Dr. Caswell Esselstyn on speed dial. He routinely promotes Dean Ornish, who's for an ultra-low-fat diet.
Right.
And so here we have this guy who has a real bully pulpit who's become a vegetarian. He has heart disease. He's a major spokesperson for the notion that you can turn cardiovascular disease around simply by not eating any fat. And then you've got Neil Barnard. You've got some real partisans who are trying to urge us to curtail our fat and protein because those are the villains.
Yeah, I've interviewed Dean Ornish and Neil Barnard, and I even had Dr. John McDougall on recently.
As well.
Another one. And so I tried to get T. Colin Campbell, but he refused to come on my show.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I am all for people making a shift away from the standard American diet onto anything that promotes real whole food. So I applaud my vegan comrades for at least putting out there, look, if you're on a standard American diet, you can see benefits from switching to a real whole foods-based diet. And a vegan diet would qualify for that for the most part, as long as you're doing real whole foods and not highly processed soy and these kinds of things.
You know, like chips. I mean, you can go down the aisle in Whole Foods. You can eat a vegan diet, but that could be a lot of processed chips, cookies, and bready type products, starchy products.
Exactly. And so I think from a shifting away from a crappy diet to a good diet, I think going to a vegan diet, if you needed to, and you think that that's going to be better than a carnivorous type, paleo, low carbish type of diet, you know, it's going to be a whole heck of a lot better. And you will see, at least in the short term, long term, there are some concerns about having too low a fat in your diet, because of the benefits that we've been talking about with fat, in your diet to your health. Your ketones are going to be very difficult to produce without having fat in your diet. So I think a high fat vegan diet could possibly be a good way. And I know a lot of, there's kind of a subset of vegans that are out there. Some very famous podcasters, Rich Roll being one of them, who is using a high fat real foods based vegan diet for his athletics. So
using coconut oil and avocados and that kind of thing.
Yep. And so I think if you're going to do it, that's the right way to do it. I still think that there are certain benefits to consuming meat in your diet that you're just not going to get unless you're eating meat. So, I think overall the vegans are more on the same page with what I'm trying to promote to people than any other group, because we're trying to get people off of crappy garbage, as I like to call it.
Well, I have to say I'm very, very impressed with your sophistication, your passion, and your dedication to get the word out. And, this is a burgeoning field. You know, as you mentioned, ketogenic diet is getting a lot of attention these days. The Paleolithic diet is getting a lot of buzz. And I think it's going to be really important that we define the debate going forward in the coming years, because the fate of America is at stake, literally, with our healthcare budget going through the roof and obesity statistics escalating. We really got to come up with some of the right answers.
Well, and now more than ever, we as patients, and that's one reason I was glad to get this book out there as somebody who's not an MD, a PhD, an RD, or any kind of credentials. I want people to see me, hey, that's a guy just like me. He's a patient. It took back control of his health. Maybe that's something I need to consider and look at for myself and stop necessarily relying on the man in the white coat who may or may not have, all the correct answers about what's right for my health.
Okay, so give us the 411 on the book. It's an e-book. It's also available through the usual bookstores and hardcover. I have a hardcover sitting in front of me.
Cool. Yeah. Yes, so you can learn more about the book itself. cholesterolclarity.com. It has a listing of all the bookstores and everywhere where you can get it. It should be in Barnes and Nobles and Books a Million and all, Amazon.com, everywhere where you would buy books. So it is in an ebook, it's in a hardback book, and I just signed the contract to do the speaking part of an audio book, which will be coming out here in a couple of months.
Excellent. You have a great voice. I wouldn't mind taking a long car trip and hearing your voice over several hours. I'll take a trip and that'll be a pretext for hearing it. All right, and the blog, which is excellent.
Yeah, it's livinglavitalowcarb.com/blog.
And then the podcast, because we have a lot of people who are we have sophisticated listeners, because no longer do you just kind of turn on the radio and listen to ambient noise.
Yeah.
People are, this is a niche audience, and people are sophisticated and they're looking for specialty information. So your podcast offers a lot of great information. Where is it?
And they're so loyal, too, whenever they start listening to you. I have three podcasts that air 5 days a week. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is the Livin' La Vida Low Carb Show. That's at thelivinglowcarbshow.com. And then on Thursday nights, I do a live radio show Ask the Low Carb Experts. I need to get you on there maybe sometime to address an issue.
Would love
and
it.
That one is at askthelowcarbexperts.com. And then Friday, I do a show with a registered dietitian who believes in a lot of what we've been talking about here today. And we bring on a couple of people from the blogging community to talk about the various health headlines of the day from our perspective. Carb Conversations with Jimmy Moore and friends, lowcarbconversations.com.
And when are you planning to roll out the Broadway musical?
I just stay busy.
That could be next. I mean, you certainly are a busy guy and very, very committed. And you're doing a great job communicating some of these important facts. I recommend the book very highly, Cholesterol Clarity. And follow Jimmy Moore because he's got lots more information that can be valuable. What's your Twitter handle?
Sure. On Twitter, I'm at Livin' Low Carb Man.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us, Jimmy Moore, and all the best to you in communicating some of this vital information.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.